Minnesota Reads on KUMD is supported in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It is 8:21. So excited to welcome John Moe to our airwaves this morning. His new book is called The Hilarious World of Depression. And I've thought about depression a whole lot of ways, been a longtime sufferer with depression. And yet, hilarious has never been the word. But I hadn't read the book until now. I feel differently about it. Hey, John, good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Lisa.
One of the things I think that is sort of hilarious is that you suffer from depression. You don't really have depression or experience depression or, you know, a person perhaps is diabetic, but they mm-hmm. don't. I mean, but with depression, you always suffer from it.
Well, you always deal with it, and I kind of struggled with the verbs to describe it for a while, because I don't feel like I really always suffer. I just always have to be aware of it. Part of what I talk about in the book is just this conscious awareness of, like, when it flares up, when the distortions come in, you need to make an effort to get that under control, and you need to find a solution that works for you in terms of therapy, medication, whatever route you want to take, you know, yoga, meditation, whatever it is, dogs.
Exactly. And I love that dogs are one of your coping mechanisms. That was something, obviously, that resonated with me quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's in there along with being in a band, which I've been in for a long time, and Bigfoot videos on YouTube, that it's just all about here's my path. Here's through trial and error. Here's what worked for me. And it's different for everybody, but I wanted to encourage people to find their own resources and make a list of what works.
They've taken a bunch of them off. I hope that we get some new ones. It was bad lip syncing videos from the Minnesota Vikings. Those were the ones that just sent me, no matter what was going on, that just sent me right off the wall. Let's back up a little bit and tell people a little, because one of the things that you talk about how depression does is it's imposter syndrome writ large. I have nothing to offer. Nobody cares what I think. Nobody cares what I say. And it makes perfect sense that you would have a job where you talk to other people and you bring other people their words. But in writing this book, it's a combination of other people's experiences, but also you kind of, you know, take people on the journey with you through your own experiences with depression. How were you able to sneak that one around your depressed brain?
Well, I mean, I'm doing really well with my mental health and have been for a while. I found stuff that worked for me, which, you know, helped me immensely to write a book. But what I found in doing, you know, dozens and dozens of interviews and spending years on this subject is that there's certain things that keep coming up for people. And a lot of those things were things that had come up for me. And so I sort of turned more of a light on those experiences that I had that I knew would resonate with people. You know, this feeling of the achievement myth, that if I could just get this next promotion, if I could get this person to go out with me, if I could buy this house, then my depression will go away because then I'd have nothing to be depressed about. That happens, like, I talked to Sean Doolittle, who's like, helped the Washington Nationals win the World Series. And he was saying, like, if I could just make an all-star team, if I could just get to the World Series, if I could just win the World Series. And he said, and you know what? I won the World Series and it was still there. And so we might not all win the World Series, but we might have all fallen for that idea. And I wrote about my experiences with that. And so I knew that there was a lot of stuff that was applicable, and if people could read it and know that they were part of something larger, if they were that they weren't so weird after all. You know, we talk about sometimes the blessing of the feeling that you're not so special. You know, you're not alone in your suffering. Other people have gone through everything you're going through, And there's, you know, a bit of a feeling of community in that.
So that leads me beautifully to my next question. As a person who has tried to do a lot of interviews where appropriate about mental illness, do we perpetuate stigma by always mentioning stigma?
You know, there's a movement in the mental health community to get rid of the word stigma, because it's a little misleading and it's a little opaque, because often what we mean by stigma is just discrimination, you know, like any other kind of discrimination. This, you know, judging somebody based not on who they are, but based on this, you know, this thing that they have, you know, this thing that isn't in the content of their character, you know? And so, I think that by talking, I don't think it's ever a bad idea to talk about things and talk about problems and draw some attention to it. You know, something I've found with this book and with the efforts that I've made is a lot of people have come out and said, yeah, I deal with this, and I was glad to know other people do. And the people who are coming out are your business people in your community. It's your mail carrier. It's your school principal. It's your politician, whatever it is. People from all over. It's not just the archetypal Pagliacci sad clown comedian. It's everybody. It's the person, you know, the next cubicle over from you.
So, question. Which is more difficult, dealing with depression or dealing with people who don't understand?
I think it's dealing with depression can be harder. You know, if it's not under control, if you haven't gotten treatment, because depression will, part of the symptoms, it's so insidious, is to prevent you from getting help, because it makes you think that you don't deserve help. Because the illness has diminished your sense of self so much that you don't think of yourself as someone deserving of love and friendship and healthcare and citizenry and opinions. And so that initial step is a lot harder. I don't get too upset at people who don't understand it. I get a little dismayed and shocked and shake my head, but I know that I need to be selective about where I place my energy and my passion. And, you know, my college roommate once said, John, don't argue with stupid people. They never know when they've lost the argument. And I've always kind of lived by that.
There have been some interesting conversations, of course, online with folks talking about, you know, these invisible illnesses that aren't like a broken leg or something, you know, that you can point to and you know, the oh, snap out of it or go take a walk and that sort of thing. And,
right.
And that's maybe the point where you just need to say, what was it you said in your book? Oh, my gosh, really? I never thought of that.
Oh, this changes everything.
I'm healed.
I think it's Maria Bamford, a brilliant comedian and Duluthian, who said, you know, you wouldn't say that about, oh, if you just take a walk, that leukemia will probably get better. You know, if you smile more, you wouldn't have such diabetes.
Uh-huh.
It makes just as much sense as that.
It really does. Now, another question. What do you find scariest? When your mind is playing tricks on you, or when something happens in the empirical world, the exterior world, that suggests to you that perhaps your mind was right all along?
Well, I kind of believe that depression can be a bit of a superpower. Jen Kirkman was on our show, and she said, people just don't know that we're better than everybody else because we can see certain truths. You know, we can at least see the world from multiple angles. We can know what the normies see, and we can know what we see. And sometimes it is really bad, and the normal folks are going through the world with this sort of glowing buffer around them. And so it might be brutal out there, but at least we know it's brutal. And so I try not to think of it as a disability, more as a difference. My daughter, my middle daughter, was born with dwarfism, and we've always approached that as a difference and not a disability. There's certain things that she can't do, like she'll never dunk a basketball. But like there's ways that she sees the world and ways that she sees people treat other people and things she understands about discrimination and about genetics that that are just different from other folks. And so I kind of think of depression the same way. It's just like, yeah, I've got a bit of a different brain than most people, but you know, that's kind of cool. Like I can understand things in a different way.
I was trying to find, I started to, in you know, to ponder about what do I find hilarious about depression. I was trying to find some hilarious things just for grins. I don't look for hilarity sure. as much as I used to. So I've been kind of looking. Do you find it a little bit hilarious that much of the rest of the world right now is shuffling along in our, and they're not walking in our shoes, they're shuffling in our bedroom slippers. These days, our emotional, psychological bedroom slippers these days.
Yeah,
and they're acting like...
They're living inside our sweatpants.
Yes, and they're acting like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. And it's like, dilettante.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've talked with people about that. I've talked with people, I've interviewed people about that, this is for people with depression. I know a lot of people who have been doing actually okay because instead of there being this sort of unassigned dread about the world and this sinking feeling that something is terrible and it's out there, well, now the terrible thing has a name and we can see that little Christmas tree ornament type molecule that everybody shows. And it's like, oh, okay, that's what the monster looks like. And so they feel like they've been prepared for this. They've been waiting for this forever. And
we've been training for this our entire lives.
Yeah, yeah. And it is interesting to see other people not want to, not be able to leave the house and be in this loose, unassigned fear. And the people who have dealt with depression have the coping mechanisms. Like, we know when something flares up, like, this is what we need to do about it. I mean, so much of my treatment and my health is about spotting the distortions as they come down the line, like, oh, everything's going to end horribly, like the catastrophizing, the black and white thinking, whatever it is, and saying, okay, that's a distortion. I know how to work around that. I hope that the normies out there can learn from us. Because now we're right all along.
we
told you so.
That vindication is real. Oh, now you want to know. You want to talk to me.
Now
about,
you want to get inside the bunker.
Right. But everybody really needs to make a new depressed friend.
Yeah.
Because
we've got
the sweatpants, we've got the chocolate, we've got the dogs, we've got the playlist of YouTube videos that make us laugh until tears squirt out of our eyes. So we're like, talk to me. I'll tell you how to get through this. It's all good.
Well, and there's basic information too about treatment. Like, a lot of people don't know, like, they think, well, I might be having something going on, I better get into a psychiatrist. And then because our healthcare system is what it is, they find out there's like a 9-month waiting list to see a psychiatrist. Go to your family doctor, go to your GP. If something is going wrong, you don't need to feel that way. Get to a doctor because it's a medical thing. And they can address it. They can get you out of the pit that you're in, and then work with you on a longer term solution for treatment. But if you're in peril with your health, go to the doctor.
And your mental health is the same way. It doesn't mean crazy. It's like, oh, I'm having this terrible, horrible pain in my stomach. Well, you go in and see a doctor. Why am I having this terrible, horrible pain? Why am I having this terrible, horrible pain in my head and my heart? Well, yeah, there you go. They'll try to get you, at least in our community here, it's a smaller community. Most of the GPs are going to try to get you over to see a psychiatrist because there are so many more options for beneficial medications, and they can tweak and refine. You don't have a choice of one or two anymore, and if they don't really work for you, you're stuck. There are all kinds of options, and this works great with that. So they'll probably try to slide you over to a psychiatrist as soon as it's possible, but they can get you some meds that may help, and they can also get you in to see somebody.
Yeah. I mean, all a mental disorder is, the disorder just refers to you having an impairment to living your life in the way you want to be living it, to the functions of your life. Like, if you're having a hard time getting out of bed, if you're having a hard time getting food made for your family, I mean, that's a disorder, and it doesn't have to be like that. It can be better, and that's what I'm trying to get across with the book, is like it can be better than it is.
John, your book is a delight. It is exactly what you had wanted it to be. You described putting a pill in a spoonful of ice cream to help a kid or a dog take the medication, and your book is exactly that. It's a warm, friendly person that is saying exactly, it can be better. And this is how bad it can be. But look, see, these are the things that you can do. We'll get some links set up so it'll be easy for folks to find some more information about your book. And, John, thank you so much for being our guest this morning. What a treat.
Oh, my pleasure. And I love the city of Duluth. I was just up there a couple days ago. So
fantastic.
Happy to be there on the radio.
Fantastic. Stop in and say hi with your mask from 6 feet away.
Will do.
John Moe this morning. He is the author of a book called The Hilarious World of Depression and the host of the podcast. He joined us this morning as our guest on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads on KUMD is produced with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.